So good morning, everyone. Let me see the hands of for the people who were not here yesterday. Just raise your hand if you were not here yesterday. Okay, we're going to start as usual with observing the three refuges and the five precepts. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Saranagamanang sampunnam anatipata veramani sikapadam samadhyami. Adinnadana veramani sikapadam samadhyami. Kamesu micchacara veramani sikapadam samadhyami. Musavada veramani sikapadam samadhyami. Suramirya majjapamadatthana veramani sikapadam samadhyami. Isranena sarnim panchasilam dhammam sadukam sarakkitam kattava appamadena sampadetabham. Silena sugatim yanti silena bhogasampada silena niputim yanti tasma silam visodai. So, friends, this is the second day of our short retreat. And for those of you who came yesterday, continue our practice. And for those who are just coming today, and I'm going to be, you know, reviewing some basic instructions on the practice. But for the benefit of those who were here yesterday, also including some additional aspects of the development of the mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So for those who are just coming today, yesterday, we are, you know, basically what we're practicing in this retreat is the basic mindfulness, practice of mindfulness using the body as the platform or for the foundation for being able to center our awareness and to hopefully be able to get a hold of our thoughts and train our mind. As I mentioned yesterday, you know, the mind operates through this body, and you know, the mind is not an easy thing to notice or get a hold of. That, you know, our thoughts are operating at a very high speed, and our thoughts and impulses arise at a very subtle level of the unconscious mind, and that it's very difficult to catch our feelings, impulses, and thoughts before we've already sort of reacted to them, or before they've sort of engaged our nervous system and caused us already to start reacting. So, of course, you know, the Buddha's teaching is all about learning how to purify our mind of greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the mental factors that cause us to produce so much unwholesome karma, that then we have to experience the consequences from, especially in terms of like breaking the precepts or uncontrolled behavior or just our obsessive thinking, not being able to control our thoughts. We get caught up in all kinds of excessive or compulsive thinking and you know, unnecessary worrying, fretting about things, you know, getting fear and anxiety and stress over things that for the most part are not really important, because we've never trained our mind. And you know, unfortunately, even though the mind is the most important thing in the universe, you know, in our education system, they haven't given much attention to it. The attention of, you know, most of the societies, the Western societies, is developing the material side of life. You know, developing the body, you know, muscles, or try to you know, use that to impress people, or just you know, cultivating the, trying to make life more comfortable materially and so on, but given little attention to the mind. So that's the main difference in the teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha was the opposite, sort of had the opposite motivation, or took the opposite approach, that even though we need to have a certain degree of material comfort, the emphasis was on training the mind, to not let the mind become a slave of the material desires and then wind up causing you know, so many unwanted mental problems later on, as we can see that has happened in society in general. So anyway, so in the practice of mindfulness, we've been following trying to follow the Buddhist teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness. That we use the body, the attention to the body, to bring our mind to the present moment. And using the body then as a stepping stone or a platform for being able to more clearly see our feelings, sensations and feelings arising in the nervous system, and then being able to more closely see our thoughts. So the body basically is the doorway for reaching the mind. Just like if you have a house and you want to go into the house, first you have to come to the doorstep. You know, you have to find the house. You're driving down this street. Oh, where's that house? This street. Oh, you know. Oh, there's the house. Finally, you find the house. And then you arrive on the doorstep. But then you have to open the door and you have to go in order to be able to enjoy that. The house, or get out of the the rain and the snow. So in the same way, in order to change the way we think and act, we have to find the doorway to the mind. So the body serves that purpose. So the mindfulness of the body means learning how to center the attention in the middle of the body, but basically it means getting in touch with the nervous system. And basically the whole world is coming through our senses. And, you know, the whole mind and body is nothing, is acting just through the nervous system and the brain. And it's where all of our thoughts, impulses, feelings are being generated. And, you know, normally our mind is lost in the past and future. And the mind is separated from the body. The mind is normally in the future. And you gave the example of how, you know, the body might be here doing something, walking down the street, but the mind is in the future and not paying attention to what you're doing, and then you get into accidents because there's a split in the body and mind. So the first stage of mindfulness is bringing the body, bringing the mind back into the body so they work together. Because the body is the natural, you know, is the natural home for the mind. You might live in a house somewhere, you know, on 3763 10th Street or something. You know, that may be your house, but your real home is this body and nervous system. Because that's really where you live. And so that's the sort of the attitude that we take up when we practice meditation. And we take up the practice of meditation as a scientific experiment. That we're, you know, we're wanting to discover, you know, the source of our mind. We're trying to discover the truth, especially, you know, the truth of suffering. You know, the Four Noble Truths, of course, is the framework for the Buddha's exploration and discovery of the nature of suffering and happiness. So everybody, you know, wants to achieve happiness, but, you know, they don't know where to look, or they're simply believing what other people have told them. So, you know, they're thinking happiness lies in the external world and how many nice things you can get. But we realize that that's not always the case. So, I mean, you already all know that. So, when I come, you know, come back to the basics of the practice, and so for those who weren't here yesterday, the sort of the main focus of attention are we have two subjects. Or objects of meditation. We're trying to cultivate both mindfulness and concentration. These are the mental qualities that we cultivate to do this experiment of our mind. So there's the primary object and the secondary object of the meditation. The primary object is our object of concentration, which is the body and breathing, or the breathing body. As I mentioned yesterday, you can either use the body itself for the primary object of concentration, or you can use the breathing itself as a primary object of concentration. However, I recommend people or suggest actually merging them and using the breathing body as the object of concentration, because you can't really separate the breathing from the body. Although you can, if you focus the attention at the tip of the nose, and you just try to feel the subtle little touch of sensation at the tip of the nose. But, you know, that's one form of anapanasati. But it's not the only form. It's not necessarily the best form for everybody. So the alternative is feeling the breathing, the expanding and contracting sensations of the breathing process, as the abdomen, rib cage, your chest is expanding and contracting. You keep the attention in that general area to feel and notice the several different sensations of expanding and contracting that are going on. And it's not just one sensation, there's several sensations of expanding and contracting in each breath, if you have the concentration to notice it. But anyway, a person can choose either one of those, whatever helps you to keep the mind focused. That's what's important. The actual object, whether you focus here or whether you focus down here or even in between, it's not really that important, not in the beginning stages. And so we use the body, the breathing body, as our field of, like the corral for our minds. Like training a horse. If you take a wild horse and you tie a short rope around its neck to a tree, it may struggle to get away and might damage its neck. But instead you can put it in a small corral, a fenced-in enclosure, maybe 10 meters by 10 meters. And you give it a little room to move around. But it's not going anywhere. It's still right in front of your line of vision. You can stand on the fence and see all of its moves. It's not going anywhere. So in the same way, we don't have to tie our attention down to one tiny little point. We can have a designated field and be able to notice a number of different sensations. So that is the way, especially for mindfulness practice, and especially if you're planning to then develop vipassana meditation. The focus of attention, kind of in the middle of the body, will set up the attention for eventually going into the deeper aspects of vipassana, especially the developing the insight into anicca or impermanence. So, we have to get into the laboratory. We're going to go into the lab, again, like with the idea of the house. You have to, find the laboratory door and go in, and then, find your microscope and peer down the microscope to examine your specimen. So in the same way, this body is considered to be the laboratory table and microscope, and the mind is what is looking down that microscope. So the concentration is the ability to hold your attention on the object, which is remembering that you're breathing in, breathing out. As I mentioned, breathing in, sitting, and breathing out, sitting. The reason why I include the breathing in, sitting, breathing out, sitting, because in the short pause between the breaths, if you don't have something to focus on, the mind will escape, into thoughts or some other distractions. So even the pause between the breaths is an object of the attention, to keep the mind, to hold the mind there. Because you give the mind one microsecond, even a nanosecond. Now all of you young people, science, right? Nanoseconds, that's a big thing, right? So even a nanosecond of idle time for the mind, it will escape. So even those short pauses between the breaths is an object of the awareness, in which you can feel the posture. So again, the posture is important, especially in sitting meditation, because meditation happens through the nervous system. And we have to keep all the major nerves on the right and left side of the spine are connected to the brain. And that's really where meditation happens. The ability to be alert and to observe the various sensations that are coming through the body and mind. So keeping the body erect will keep the nervous system in an optimal functioning and to keep awake. We have gravity always pulling us down. So we have to resist the downward pull of gravity. Again, this head weighs a lot. It's just sitting on top of a spinal neck vertebrae the size of a quarter. And so, and the chin sticking out, the gravity pulls that chin down, and then you start slouching. And as soon as you start slouching, that means you've already lost at least 50% the clarity of your mind, the clarity of the alertness. You might still be able to observe and feel the breathing while slouching like that, but it's not going to be really clear. Because the moment you straighten up, it's almost, you can feel like almost an electric bolt go through the body. Or like pulling on a lamp, pulling the chain on a bulb. Or the dimmer switch. As soon as you start going like this, like the dimmer switch is being dimmed down. So the effort in keeping the posture straight is going to pay off in the long run, even though it takes some effort to do. And the ideal posture is what's called the tripod, where both knees and the buttocks are making contact with the floor. Now for those sitting in chairs, you still have the buttocks and the feet contacting the floor. It might not be in a tripod shape, but still, it's okay. And ideally the buttock should be elevated at least 2 inches higher than your knees. Because it's important to keep the inward curve of the lower spine in place. Because the inward curve of the lower spine keeps the upper body erect. It supports over half the weight of the body. Is all there being supported by the inward curve of your lower spine. And if that bulges outward, there's nothing to support the body and you keep being hammered down more and more, then all kinds of pains will occur because of that. So establishing and trying to maintain the inward curve of the lower spine, it takes effort, but that effort will pay off in the long run. Because we're not practicing meditation just for a day, for a week, or even a year. Meditation for most people is going to be a lifetime process. We're in it for the long term. So it's good to set up a good foundation in the beginning, not just thinking about short term, grab that nimitta or whatever it is, We're talking about, long term mental development. And so the effort that you put into cultivating a good posture is going to benefit and pay off in the long run. And then the hands, people hold their hands in different ways. Some, it's most comfortable, people usually just let them, rest down on the lap somewhere because of the comfort. But doing that causes the shoulders to come forward a little bit. The shoulders to round, have rounded shoulders. But actually, ideally, you want to keep the shoulders back so the upper chest is open so the breath can more easily come in, flow in and out in a more full way, in a non-obstructed way. If you're kind of sitting like this, you're constricting the chest and causing tension in the breathing process, because it's, the lungs are trying to expand while the body is contracting around it, producing tension. So when you're able to keep the shoulders back and upright, then the breath can naturally come in, and you can feel it better. And also your circulation will be better. The circulation and the oxygenation of the blood. So these are all aspects, again, sort of physiological aspects of the, what I call the physiology of meditation. Most people think meditation is just a mental exercise. But, and it is primarily, but, you know, the body, especially in the beginning stages, becomes a source of, you know, obstructions to the practice. So, once the object of concentration again is the breathing and the posture, and to develop the ability to, you know, stay centered. So that's the concentration, is keeping the mind remembering either breathing or sitting, or both breathing in, sitting, breathing out, sitting, and feeling the sensations connected with that. But at the same time, other things are happening. And the mindfulness is the alertness for the distractions. So you're trying to concentrate, but the three main obstacles to the concentration are physical pain, sleepiness, and the monkey mind, or random wandering thoughts. And these are what I call the three thieves. The thieves are trying to steal our mind. So we're trying to keep our mind, you know, in the present moment, but these thieves are trying to take our mind away from the present moment. So mindfulness is that alertness when we're getting distracted, at least in a very simple way. And so we can observe the distraction and hopefully let go of it, or apply whatever remedial measures are necessary until that distraction then drops away and we're able to remain or come back to reestablish our attention on the breathing. So the sharper your mindfulness is, the quicker you can notice distractions, the easier it is to detach from them and keep the mind focused on your primary object of meditation. So balancing mindfulness and concentration, these are the skills of the meditator. The skills in balancing both concentration and meditation. Concentration and mindfulness. And there's the trap of concentration, or the trap of tranquility also, that as you go on meditating, the mind, as you develop concentration, the mind can become very tranquil, and the mind can get even too tranquil, and it can lose its brightness, and it can space out also. If the mind becomes too quiet, there's a danger of sort of spacing out, or just getting trapped in a kind of a feel-good void, in which there's no pains, feelings of the body and pains will kind of disappear, the mind will be very quiet, there'll be awareness, but in the blissful, the comfortable feelings that arise, it's just, you know, you kind of just hang out in that and are grooving with these pleasurable feelings. And the meditation kind of stops its progress. So you have to avoid getting caught in the trap of tranquility. And along with that are the other traps, such as seeing little lights, colored lights, or seeing other images. Again, these blissful sensations, or other strange sensations. Sometimes you might feel like, you know, the body is being pushed one way or another, or being turned upside down, and the feelings of your hands or body disappearing. There's lots of strange, unusual sensations or visions that might arise in meditation. And the mind can get enamored by them, can get lulled by them, and attached by them, and sidetracked. And you can get sidetracked by them. So you have to be alert for those various kind of distractions, and not to try to focus on them or hold on to them. But see them like everything else, it's impermanent. And whatever is coming to your body and mind is just a momentary experience that arises and will quickly vanish unless you hold on to it. And it's the mind holding on to the various sensations and thoughts and objects moving through the body and mind that then causes the mind to get distracted and other forms of agitation. So the balancing of the mindfulness helps you not to fall into that trap of tranquility. The mindfulness again is the alertness of the mind that's maintaining awareness of other things coming through it. And even though you can, if you're concentrating on the breathing, doesn't mean you're not going to notice other things. Even while you're concentrating on the breathing, and the breathing can become very clear once you reach deeper level of concentration. It's like the movement sensations of the breath, whether it's sensation here or whether it's the sensations generally of the expanding and contracting, or even of the sitting posture, to be like it becomes very clear and fully dominates the awareness. But at the same time, you can notice other things coming and going as well. You don't get absorbed into a kind of a tranquil void or a spaced out state. And it's at that point when the practice of vipassana and developing the insight into impermanence then becomes one's focus of attention rather than the breathing. The breathing just becomes another object amongst many that's coming and going in the awareness. So that's the point when vipassana meditation really starts. Or at least starts to deepen. And so there's a kind of a point reached when a person has to kind of sometimes decide what one wants to do. Does one want to just stay only with the breath and not be bothered with impermanence? Or does one want to open out and, you know, leave the breath aside, so to speak, or just let it be there by itself and focus on impermanence? So this is kind of a lot of people get to that point and then they don't know what to do, or they often ask, well, how much concentration do I need before I can then practice vipassana, and so on. But that's going to be different for each person. There's no clear cut exact kind of a line where that will occur. The mind may naturally just gravitate toward that. But the function of concentration is to prepare the mind for developing insight. And that's, you know, the way that the Buddha's teachings are directed toward that. And of course, insight is the path for purifying the mind of the defilements and the path to liberation. So you get the mind, bringing the mind into to be centered in the breathing body, then balancing both. If the mind is too mindful, or if you're aware of too many things and there isn't that tethering post of concentration, then the mind can get too excited, or it can get too overwhelmed with lots of things coming through it. So the concentration has also the purpose of keeping the mind in a certain calm level. So the ability to have the breath kind of coming and going in the background most of the time, or as I mentioned yesterday, even 50% of the time. If you just had 50% of the time your mind noticing the breath, actually that would be a very high degree of concentration. Even though people talk about perfect concentration, for insight meditation, it's not really that necessary. And even you keep 50% of your attention noticing the breathing, or the body, the breathing, and reserve 50% of the attention in reserve in the background, being aware of any intruders, being aware of pains arising, being aware of wandering thoughts arising, being aware of sounds starting to disturb your attention. You know, it's the mindfulness is that background watchdog that's monitoring what is occurring in the rest of the nervous system. And the concentration is the part of the mind that's staying focused in the present moment on the breathing or the body or whatever object you've chosen. So learning to balance those is really the skill in the meditation. Now coming back to the posture for a moment, as I mentioned, ideally the two knees and the buttocks making contact with the ground, and ideally the buttocks raised higher than the knees so you can keep the inward curve of the lower spine in place. If the knees are above the buttocks, it'll be impossible to keep the inward curve of the spine in place. So that's why most people, choose to have sit on cushions. But some of you may need to use, an extra cushion, especially if the knees are still off the ground. The more you can bring the knees down toward the floor, and then the buttocks raised up, then it'll be easier to maintain a straight sitting posture for longer periods of time. And then the hands, as I mentioned, actually it's a good idea to not, to have the hands pushing on the legs, because gravity will pull your hands into your legs and cause discomfort. But to hold the hands up a little bit, so they're about 2 inches below the navel, so that you're not actually resting on your legs. There's a little space between. And that helps to keep the shoulders back. And keeping the shoulders back will help you to maintain the center of gravity, or to be more upright. But that, again, holding the hands up, people say, well, it's too much attention or effort. That's okay. The effort in keeping the hands up will be the effort to be awake and to be aware of the body. And you don't want to be too comfortable in meditation, because if you get too comfortable in meditation, it's like, then, it's just sleepy time. So the idea is not to be too comfortable in meditation. And so maintaining a posture gives enough effort to keep the mind awake. Because the biggest enemy to meditation is drowsiness, the mind kind of sinking into this, you know, fuzzy, drowsy state. And so, by keeping the body straight and the psychophysical energy circulating, then that will help to minimize the onset of sleepiness. But anyway, that's up to each person to experiment with. But once you put your hands in a certain place, don't move them around. See, some people in meditation, they hold their hands like this for a few minutes, and they go like this, and they go like this. You know, in one meditation, you might change their hands several times. That shows a restless mind. Once you discovered a good position for you, a comfortable position, then try not to move that. Now, I want to mention, to help concentrate, yesterday, or usually in my instructions, you know, I have people just kind of be aware of, you know, breathing in, sitting, breathing out, sitting, or making the brief mental notes of just in, sitting, out, sitting, you know, silent mental notes in the mind. So you're clear on what is occurring in the present moment. That, you know, the breath is coming in and that brief pause, and there's the sitting posture where you can check the posture. If the chin has gone down, you can kind of gently lift it back up. And then going on with the out breath, sitting in, sitting out, sitting. But even those mental notes are not necessary, but these are just training devices. Or like training wheels, learning how to walk. And there's another one called counting the breaths. So if you still have lots of trouble with wandering mind, it means lots of thoughts, then the technique of counting can help you to stay focused. If you want to, you know, try counting the breaths, and as you feel the breath coming in, whether you're feeling it here or you're feeling the expanding sensations, you just mentally, you know, count one. And on the out breath, again, one. Because it's just one complete in and out breath. With the next in breath, two. And out breath, two. And again, three. And three. Like that, to count up to 10. But you'll probably get lost. Even before reaching 10, you may get lost. The mind will get lost in thought, or maybe you've drifted off into some drowsiness, and you recognize, oh, what was that? And don't try to guess where you were counting. You start again at one, and then try to continue again with the counting. So it's like a challenge, you know, not to lose your counting, because you have to keep going back to zero and starting over again. So you kind of look foolish and you can't even count to 10. So it's a little extra incentive for the mind to stay more awake and not to allow it to drift into, you know, some thinking, or to maintain, to remain awake. Now, if you can make it up to 10, in reverse, even making it up to 10 is actually quite an achievement, without getting the mind getting lost. But then reverse the count from 10 to 9, and then 8, 7, and then back to 1. So if you're able to count from 1 to 10, and from 10 back to 1, then that's really good enough. That should be, you know, that in itself is quite an achievement. And then to let go of the counting and come back to just a simple noting of in, out, or in, sitting, out, sitting. And if After doing that, the awareness becomes very bright, then even those mental notes will disappear. And there'll just be the awareness, the knowing, that of breathing in and breathing out, but without any extra mental sort of commenting. So that's the gradual development of the concentration in awareness. And employing those little techniques of either counting or noting to help keep the mind on its object. So does anybody have any questions on anything I just was talking about?
You mentioned three things that disturbs the mindfulness. One is pain, right? What are the other two?
Sleepiness and thinking. Because when you start to go to sleep, then you lose consciousness of the body in breathing. Oh, did I say three P's? Anyway, and within thinking is included both sense desire and ill will and any other types of thoughts. But sometimes it's good to be clear what sort of thought. If you catch yourself, you know, having some sensual fantasy, then recognizing it as, you know, sensual desire can be good. Or if it's ill will or aversion toward anger, somebody to note ill will is in the mind. Or just a general category of thinking. So you can use those notes as well. So when you're meditating, like say you got a pain arising in the leg, and you can see how the mind is being pulled toward that pain, you have to be aware of that. And you can make a note of pain, or you can be aware of struggling. When the mind, you notice the mind will start struggling against some pain. That means it's tensing up. You know, and it doesn't like that pain. You should be aware of that. You can make a mental note of just pain, or struggling. So that you can relax around it. The idea is that by just watching it objectively, that will help to minimize the reaction to it. It will help you to observe that pain a little longer before perhaps then changing the posture. But ideally, you know, we observe those painful or irritating sensations like an itch or some other thing arises. You can see the desire to want to scratch or rub it, and be aware of urging or wanting. Because that's a mental activity. You've gone from observing now to wanting or desire, so it's important to notice that so that you can observe it objectively, relax around it, and the mind then will be able to hopefully remain focused on its meditation, you know, object. And so with the same thing with sleepy, when you notice yourself kind of like this, then be aware, sleepy. And then it's good to take a deep, slow breath. Whenever you realize you're sleepy, first of all, straighten the posture. Because 9 times out of 10, you won't be sitting straight. So first, you straighten up the posture, and then take a deep, slow breath. Like, feel that gradual expansion through the abdomen, the middle rib cage, and the upper chest. It's very beautiful to feel that. And hold that in for a few seconds so the oxygen in the lungs have time to transfer to the blood, and feel that slow contraction. And it really is a super way of staying concentrated, because when you're taking a deep, slow breath like that, the mind is stays right there. And to do that a few times may help to drive out the sleepiness, and then you come back to your normal awareness. Now, normally when practicing anapanasati, the teachers tell you, don't control the breath, don't control the breath. Now, that's true, but especially in the higher stages of concentration, not necessarily in the beginning. And actually, because I studied yoga and so on, and one of my specialties is sort of in integrating some yoga practice with the meditation, that doing some deliberate deep slow breathing at the beginning of the meditation period will help to oxygenate the blood, and it will help to imprint the feeling of breathing in the consciousness, so that when you let go of the deep breathing later, the residue of that will stay in your mind longer, and then hopefully help you to stay awake, because the nervous system would have been pumped up with the oxygenated blood, and hopefully remain awake a little longer. But later in the meditation, when you feel drowsiness again, you can come back. Even just one or two of those deep, slow breaths can perk you right up, like getting a kind of a quick fix. You know, can kind of perk the mind up and straighten back up to a sitting position, and then keep going. And if you have even more trouble with the thinking, along with the counting, then you can do deliberate, slightly slower, deeper breath, just to help to keep the mind on the breathing, because it takes more concentration to sort of regulate the breathing. So, in that sense of helping you to stay concentrated, it can also be a good thing to know. But in the deeper stages, when the mind reaches tranquility, then you don't want to do any controlled breathing, and then to just observe the breath to get into deeper states. But in the beginning, I don't think it makes much difference. In fact, it makes it better. Because if you have the proper breathing anyway, then you don't need, but most people have very shallow breathing because of their postures, because of their mental states. Their breathing has become very short and shallow. It's become unnatural. Meditation teacher says, just watch the natural breath. The problem is people have lost their natural breath. Their breath has become unnatural because of their poor postures and habits. So this idea of just watching the natural breath, there's no basis in that. The natural breath is learning, is the breath, coming in more deeper and fuller, and slower, deeper breathing. Even doctors now will tell you that slower, deeper breathing is more healthy. That's why yogis, of course, developed the pranayama as a precursor for meditation. They develop asana, pranayama, yoga practice as before they start doing deeper meditation, because of the physiological benefits of having done that. But just telling a beginner, a Westerner whose body's polluted and fouled up with so much toxins and they're breathing kind of half dead, to tell them just to try to watch their breath and focus, that doesn't often work. So, therefore, using some deep, slower breathing is okay.